Good morning. Let the record show that it's 8 o'clock Tuesday, February 17th, and House Community Regional Affairs. Joining us is Co-Chairman Kathy Munoz, Representative Millett, and last year's Speaker of the House, Representative Harris. If you have a cell phone, turn it off, especially there's somebody in the back that's always a one has one on. And we have two bills today. We have House Bill 134, Cruise Ship Wastewater, and House Bill 121, Municipal Property Tax Credit. It's intended the co-chairs to hear both of these today. Okay. Looks like we've got quite a few people lined set up to testify. At this time, Karen, could you come forward? I'd like to hear House Bill 121 first to Representative Coghill's legislation.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Lidster, and I am staff to Representative John Coghill. And he sends his greetings and apologizes for not being able to be here this morning. One of the things that is a dynamic of living in Alaska is the cold, particularly in the interior that we have, and the inversions. We have the need to keep our air as clean as possible. And this summer I had an opportunity to learn about what EPA calls a particulate matter. And it is a mixture of extremely small particles and liquid droplets. And these small particles can cause extremely serious health problems. And the smallest of these particles is referred to as PM2.5. In 2006, EPA increased the stringency of the PM2.5 standard, and then in 2007, defined the requirements for states to clean the air in areas where the fine particle pollution did not meet the national air quality standard. The areas that did not meet the standard were called non-attainment. Non-attainment areas had 3 years to submit a plan to EPA that included enforceable measures to reduce air pollution emissions and show how reasonable progress would be made to attain that standard. These standards must be achieved no later than 2015. As the Fairbanks North Star Borough and other communities look for ways to meet air quality standards, they wanted more than just restrictions and enforcement-based options. House Bill 121 provides that other option, an optional tax credit, an incentive for citizens to make improvements to their home and business that improve the community's air quality. The language in this bill requires that eligibility, conditions, and other criteria be established by ordinance, which allows the local flexibility in drafting appropriate incentives to address individual community needs. More than a public issue, non-attainment areas are an economic issue. Federal highway funds could be lost or new projects denied. HB 121 will help communities provide incentives that promote a healthy economy for residents, and we request your support on this bill. Thank you.
Hey, is there any questions from committee members?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding in talking to folks about this is purely a May situation. In other words, there's nothing that mandates the municipalities to do this. They have that option. The state here, by passing this law, is not mandating, like we do with senior citizens tax exemptions or other things like that. We're not mandating that they have to do this. It's just if they choose to.
Through the chair, Representative Harris, that is perfectly correct. A municipality may, by ordinance.
And if I may follow up.
Yes, sir, go ahead, please.
This does nothing to change the environmental regulations, the air quality. All this does is encourage people to put in systems that actually promote healthier air. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, that is correct.
Okay, thank you, Rob.
For the record, Suzanne, please note that Representative Sisna, Keller, and Gardner have joined us this morning. Good morning. Just for the record, we do have two people online. If there's any questions, that's Alice Edwards in Fairbanks with DEC and Nadine Winters in Fairbanks with the North Star Borough. They're available for questions. Yes, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And following on Representative Harris's questions, if the program, well, I guess the first question is, do you have any indication that the municipality of Fairbanks would implement this if the bill passes and they're allowed to? That's the first question. And then the second question is, if they did so and the program were wildly successful and lots of people participated in it and bringing down their air pollution levels, but also bringing down the income to the community of Fairbanks and by reduced property taxes, would we not kind of potentially have opened a can of worms somewhere else?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I do believe that the Fairbanks North Star Borough is very interested in passing this bill and looking at incentives for its residents to try and help with the air quality. As to the second question, if it was wildly successful, I would think that this being at a local level, by ordinance, they would consider and look at what the impact of that might be with the reduction in the tax that they would be bringing in because of the tax credit. And that's why it's good that it's actually on a very local level by ordinance for each municipality.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I follow up on
that? Yes, sir. Representative Harris.
Questioning from Representative Gardner. It would seem to me, though, that the portion of the property taxes that might be allowed to be credited would be for the expense of putting in a new system. You wouldn't put a new system in every year. You might do it once, and then you'd have the system in, and then your credit would go away. You'd have to prove that you spent it on something each year to have it applicable each year, I would assume.
Through the chair, Representative Harris, that would probably be true. The one expense, it's verifiable, they get their tax credit, and then it is in place.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, Co-Chair Munoz?
Would you like to move?
Please.
I'd like to move House Bill 121 from committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving this?
Mr. Chairman, just an objection for a second. Was there any public testimony on this?
They were just available for questions.
Okay. All right. Remove my objection.
Yes. Okay. House Bill 121 is moved on to the next committee referral.
Thank you very much.
Okay. While we're getting settled in here, just for the record, it's Tommy Moe's birthday.
As he said, it's all downhill from here, right?
Well, he's joined by Paris Hilton and Michael Jordan, too.
Oh,
thank heaven.
Okay.
All right. I won't touch that one.
Okay. Who else we got? All right. At this time, we will bring up House Bill 134. Representative Harris is a prime co-sponsor. Before we do that, Representative Munoz, could you please make the motion to adopt a new CS, please?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move CS for House Bill 134, CNRA version, and it's 26-LS0570/E.
Okay, Representative Harris, for the record, please state your name and, of course, your if you could address the CS technical amendment.
Tell me what it is. You did it. I forget. Now we edit. Oh, there. That's right. Okay. Yeah, passenger. That's right. Okay. For the record, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm John Harris, representative from District 12. And I am the primary sponsor, along with a whole bunch of other people here that are sponsors of House Bill 134. Right off the top, let me address the technical amendment that caused the CS to be. It changed in the title to conform with the body of the bill. The word passenger behind the word commercial passenger vessel, rather than people be confused with other types of vessels that might be out there that could qualify for this legislation. Mr. Chairman, it's not because I was looking for this bill that I'm the sponsor of it, but because I agree with the subject matter. First of all, let me say the intent of carrying this bill, Mr. Chairman, is not to lower or to decrease the pollution standards set by the state of Alaska. It is purely to give the Department of Environmental Conservation, which is the oversight for the state, the ability to implement the law as they see fit that conforms with the standards of the law. Right now, in the initiative, it restricts their ability to basically implement DEC regulations. Mr. Chairman, this is not the first amendment to this initiative. You will hear probably some people say, and I've had just a couple of emails saying we're trashing the initiative, we're trashing the will of the people, and all that sort of stuff. Quite frankly, that is not the case. It's not the intent of the case, and I'll try to elaborate on that in just a minute. The first amendment to the initiative was by Representative Holmes. It was House Bill 217, and related to the disclosures portion of the initiative, passed overwhelmingly. The second was by my good friend Senator Elton, Senate Bill 121, which related to the discharge from smaller cruise ships, passed overwhelmingly. I think the question we have to ask, what was the intent of Alaskans when they passed this initiative? Certainly the intent was to strengthen environmental regulations involving discharges of large cruise ships. No doubt about it. I think all of us agree to that. We just saw in the newspaper the other day where the cruise ships, a few of them, violated the air quality standards. We set those. DEC did their job. They were penalized for it. That's good. It's not good that they polluted, but it's good that they, we have standards in place, and when they violated it, they were charged. I don't think they did it on purpose, but I think that if you don't have strong regulations in place, business has proven year after year after year that they will try to encroach upon what the regulations are and try to one-up them. All right, what we're doing here with this piece of legislation is not to diminish the standards at all. In fact, it has nothing to do with the standards. All it does is give the DEC more tools to implement the standards. Understanding, before Prop 2 was passed, Mr. Chairman, standards were established in 2001 by House Bill 260, and that bill passed in both bodies overwhelmingly. I can say that in this in the committee. I couldn't say that on the floor, Mr. Chairman, but I can say it here. To that degree, people will say, well, there are other methods to make this apply, to make these industries comply. Those other methods will not be diminished at all by the passage of this bill. They will still be applicable. The DEC can still require them to do that. This doesn't change that at all. All this does is gives the DEC the ability to test in a little bit different manner than they have the ability under the initiative to test now. But it does not stop, will not stop, the industry from having to implement, if DEC so chooses, to implement new and modern technology. Nothing prohibits that at all. So if you hear that argument, Mr. Chairman, you can dismiss it, because the DEC will have that ability, can have that ability, and should have that ability to mandate those things if they're available. Doesn't do anything at all. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to close here briefly with one little comment. And I'm sure that I'll get questions, and I'm sure there'll be others that there'll be others that will want to talk on this issue. If you open up your newspaper, the Daily News, not the Juneau Empire, but the Anchorage Daily News this morning, you'll see an op-ed piece. Now, most of the time when the Daily News writes an op-ed piece about something I'm involved with, it's not complimentary. But I feel pretty good about it. I mean, this is the second, quite frankly, I probably would not have carried this bill if I'd had to fight them on this issue, but this is the second op-ed piece or second op-ed piece that they have done that have been supportive of this piece of legislation. Makes me feel very comfortable. I am not opposed to keeping the environment clean. In fact, just the opposite. I happen to be the representative who represents the worst environmental pollution issue that the state has ever seen in the Exxon Valdez, and I'm not proud of the fact that we had that problem. But I am proud of the fact that we collectively, whether it be the people of Alaska or the legislature in general, have looked at the issues and tried to make Alaska a cleaner place, a better place, environmentally standard place to live. So just one little paragraph here I'll read to you, if I may, Mr. Chairman. So it says from the Anchorage Daily News editorial, so we say yes, I think they missed out a word here, but so we yes to the Harris Amendment, but with this addition, and I agree with this, require both the cruise industry and DEC to report on the latest practical technologies for the cleanest effluent, and give DEC the authority to require those, at least as pilot programs, within a reasonable time frame. I couldn't have said it any better. I didn't write it either, by the way. That's the crux of the matter. One last paragraph. The idea here is simple. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Cruise pollution controls are vastly improved over 10 to 15 years, and largely due to the initiative. I give very much credit to the people who put this initiative forward, largely due to that. What they discharge is much cleaner than what Alaska cities pour into Alaska waters every day. And I said to myself, I'm not going to bring this issue up because I know it might divert to other issues, but give the cruise lines some leeway. Not much, but some. And they're not asking for a whole lot. I think you'll hear that from other people who testify. So, Mr. Chairman, I ask for a favorable review on this piece of legislation, and I don't think it's near as controversial as some may want to make it sound, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Representative Harris. Are there questions from the committee members? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I don't know if everybody's getting the email from Gershon Cohen, who was one of the initial sponsors, and I have an email here just from this morning, and apparently there was a report out yesterday by the DEC, and has anybody seen that report?
On the violations?
No, the technology is available.
They're having a conference tomorrow, and I'm sure that will be part and parcel of it.
Yeah. Representative Gardner, I guess that we do have the department in the room, so it might be appropriate to address that after their presentation.
Okay, and I'll just say for the record then, if that report is available, I'd sure like to see it before we vote on this.
Representative Sisna.
Mr. Chair, I guess this is almost a question to you. I'm trying to understand, because I do understand there is a presentation coming up that will actually spell out some of the details that I know I'm interested in. And we're hearing this now. Are we planning on passing this bill today?
It's the intent of the chairs is to take all testimony, and then we will consider that after that.
Okay. So there's a possibility that we actually will be able to hear that presentation first before we make.
What presentation are you talking about?
Well, there is some kind of presentation on the technologies that are available, so that we can actually, in a very public way, know what's there. Because I'm hearing different comments from different people, and I'd like to see something that actually is going into this.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
If I may.
Yes, sir.
It quite frankly does not make any difference what the hearing says tomorrow, because this bill does not change that. DEC will still be able to mandate, as it said in the Daily News article, they will still be able to mandate the best available technology if they so believe it to be the best case for Alaska. This bill does nothing to change that at all. It just gives them, in the initiative, that bound their hands. It bound their hands on where they contest and how they contest. All this does is say, let the DEC do their job. And part of their job could be, and may be, that they mandate the best available technology. And that's what the thing tomorrow will do, is it will try to spell out maybe what might be available, what may be available. Believe me, I've been through the best available technology more than anybody in this room has with the Valdez terminal and the tankers and all that sort of stuff. And best available technology can be very expensive and can be very effective, or it can not necessarily be as effective but be very expensive. So that all needs to be determined. But this bill does nothing. And anybody who will sit up here and tell you that will not be telling you the truth. This bill does nothing to keep the DEC from being able to mandate best available technology.
Representative Sisna.
To that, I'm happy to hear you say that. This is, I think, my sixth year, seventh year, something like that, on this committee. And I think it's important to not have to hurry, especially at the first, I think we're just past the first month, and in two full years that we can really look at this and make sure we're doing the right thing. If there's more information out there, I don't think there's anything adversarial about wanting to get that. So I'm not saying anything against what you're saying. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And there is a conference tomorrow, and I was going to ask the department to give us sort of a preview. And then I'm assuming that the people they're going to testify on this will also share their views on that conference. Appreciate that question. Thank you, Representative Harris. And Representative Keller, did you have a question?
No.
Thank you. Okay. It's the co-chair's intent that we next go to the department to hear their presentation on this legislation. And then we'll move on to several people that we have both in the room and online. And it's my intent and the co-chair's intent that we will listen, we will hear everyone this morning. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Lynn Kent. I'm the director for the Water Division at Department of Environmental Conservation. And it's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. I do have copies of my testimony, and I'll make sure that committee staff get a copy of those comments. The Department of Environmental Conservation has been implementing the cruise ship initiative that was passed by Alaskan voters in 2006. The initiative included three main environmental provisions that we've been busy on. The first is a requirement to have an ocean ranger on board the vessel. The second is a requirement for vessels to report their location hourly to DEC. And the third requirement is for vessels that intend to discharge wastewater, they need to obtain a wastewater discharge permit from DEC. So what I'd like to do this morning is provide an update on all three of the environmental requirements of the initiative, including the permit requirements, technologies and studies that we've been working on, and also the impact of HB 134 on the permitting process. Starting with the Ocean Rangers, the initiative required an Ocean Ranger or a Coast Guard licensed marine engineer to be on board all large cruise vessels that are entering Alaska waters. The purpose of their presence on board the vessels is to observe the vessel's compliance with state and federal environmental, sanitation, health, and safety rules. That program is funded by a $4 per berth fee, and it nets about $4 million per year, and that's how much we invest in the program each year. DEC implemented a pilot program during the 2007 cruise ship season. We used some marine engineers and some environmental professionals. We were trying to learn about the program and what it would take to implement it. We looked at things like the training needs for the Ocean Rangers. We developed a checklist for their observations. We learned all about making reservations for every cruise ship coming to Alaska. We worked on scheduling of Ocean Rangers and also how the Ocean Rangers would communicate with DEC while they're on board the vessels. The full implementation of the Ocean Ranger program began with the last cruise ship season in 2008. And we had an Ocean Ranger on board 88% of the voyages for the entire time they were in Alaska waters, and the other vessels were visited while they were at a port in Alaska. During that time, we received over 2,000 daily reports from the Ocean Rangers, with 126 incidents that were that we learned about through the Ocean Ranger process that required follow-up. Almost all of those issues were dealt with immediately by the vessel when brought to the attention of the the environmental officer on board the vessels. In terms of the vessel tracking, the cruise ship initiative did require them to report their location to us hourly while they were in Alaskan waters. All of the vessels complied with this requirement, and DEC has been able to use that information to verify compliance. The third main part of the initiative was the wastewater discharge permit. It required large cruise ships to obtain a wastewater discharge permit from DEC and to comply with Alaska's water quality standards at the point of discharge, and that's the words that are in HB 134 that we're concerned with here today. Alaska's water quality standards are regulations that describe how clean our fresh water and our marine waters have to be to protect various uses. So we protect fresh water for things like drinking water, and fresh water and marine waters for things like contact recreation, and of course protection of aquatic life. The standards apply to the water body and not directly to a wastewater discharge, except in the case of discharges from large cruise ships where the discharges must meet the water quality standards at the point of discharge, and that's how the language in the Citizens Initiative was written. We did develop and issue a general permit last spring in March. The permit contains long-term effluent limits for, among other things, ammonia, copper, nickel, and zinc that are based on the water quality standards. These are strict effluent limits that must be met by the 2010 cruise ship season via the terms of the permit that we issued. The permit also contains a compliance schedule and interim limits that are less stringent for the 2008 and 2009 cruise ship seasons. The effect of HB 134 would be to allow DEC, under certain circumstances, to authorize mixing zones for treated wastewater that's discharged from cruise ships. And a mixing zone is simply an area in the receiving water body where the water quality standards can be exceeded while the wastewater has a chance to mix with the receiving waters. And then, of course, the water quality standards have to be met at the edge of that authorized mixing zone. DEC has been looking at the science surrounding cruise ship wastewater for many years. For the last few years, we've been engaged in a series of studies, some of them done in conjunction with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, about how cruise ship discharges mix with the receiving waters. Based on our work to date, the following are some of the facts as we know them, and I'll start out with information about the quality of the treated wastewater from cruise ships. All of the large cruise vessels that discharge into Alaska waters have installed what are called advanced wastewater treatment systems that produce a very high-quality effluent. During the 2008 cruise ship season, 20 of the 31 large cruise ships that call on Alaska discharged into state waters and were covered under our state general permit. Under the terms of the permit, they took 206 effluent samples. Each sample was analyzed to determine the concentration of 9 different parameters. We're most concerned about 4 parameters, ammonia, copper, nickel, and zinc. Out of 824 data points, there were 36 exceedances of the interim permit limits, and that means about 4% of the data points that exceeded the interim limits. The most frequent exceedance was for ammonia, 21 of the 36 samples. If we were to look at exceedances of the stricter long-term permit limits, again, these are the ones that take effect in 2010, we see a very different picture. Based on the 2008 effluent monitoring, there would be 563 exceedances of the long-term effluent limits for those same 4 parameters. So about 68% of the data points would exceed the long-term effluent limits. Again, these are the ones that are based on the water quality standards. Turning to a moment on the dilution studies, it is important to understand the effects of the cruise ship discharges on Alaska waters. And in order to do that, we have to look at the quality of the wastewater that's discharged, the data that I just mentioned to you, as well as the dilution that the wastewater is subject to when it hits the receiving water body. We then use that information to estimate whether the wastewater would cause exceedances of the water quality standards in the receiving water body. A few years ago, DEC convened a science advisory panel to look at the results of a field study that EPA had conducted in 2001. EPA was looking at the effect of discharges on Alaska waters when a vessel is underway. The science panel determined that when a typical typical large cruise ship is moving at a minimum speed of 6 knots, the wastewater discharge is subject to tremendous dilution. If they're discharging at 200 cubic meters per hour, the dilution factor is 50,000. And what that means is when you take the sample results and divide it by the 50,000 dilution factor, the science panel concluded that the wastewater would almost instantaneously meet the water quality standards in the receiving water body. Again, that's from a vessel that's underway. During the last legislative session, the legislature directed DEC to evaluate how treated cruise ship effluent mixes with and dilutes into the receiving waters. We conducted the study in Skagway this past season in conjunction with the research vessel, the ocean research vessel BOLD, which is owned by the Environmental Protection Agency. And we did provide an interim report on that study to the legislature in January. But just in a nutshell, the study that we did last summer was designed to collect field data in order to calculate the dilution that occurs to wastewater when it's discharged under worst-case scenarios. So from a stationary vessel into a confined receiving environment that has very limited flushing. For purposes of this study, we looked at ships that were moored in Skagway Harbor to represent the worst-case study for, or worst-case scenario for dilution. The results of that study were mixed. Under certain assumptions, water quality standards would be met in the receiving water within 15 meters of the vessel. And under other circumstances or other assumptions, it would take a greater distance from the vessel to achieve the water quality standards. So while that work is not complete yet, it certainly suggests that in certain worst cases, mixing zones may not be appropriate for vessels that are moored. DEC is also looking at wastewater treatment technologies, as was mentioned a few minutes ago. We are not currently aware of treatment systems that are readily available to be installed on all vessels by the 2010 season that would produce effluent meeting water quality standards without the use of mixing zones. We are in the process right now of looking at the cruise line's efforts to reduce ammonia, copper, and nickel and zinc in their wastewater effluent. They're looking at potential source reduction. They're evaluating what kinds of products are brought on board the vessel that might contain those substances and seeing if they can reduce the input of those substances. And as necessary, they're also looking at new treatment technologies. DEC has retained a consultant to evaluate new and emerging technologies that could potentially be installed on cruise ships to meet the water quality standards at the point of discharge. And a draft report is available for review. We posted it on our website yesterday.
Please go ahead. We'll, as soon as she's finished, we'll have questions.
I just want her to repeat a sentence.
Yes, yes, go ahead.
DEC is not currently aware of. Can you just repeat
that? I can. We're not currently aware of treatment systems that are readily available to be installed on all vessels by 2010.
Thank you. That's
when the new permit requirements come into effect, that would produce effluent meeting water quality standards without the use of mixing zones. There are certainly shore-based types of treatment technologies that can do that, but they haven't been applied to vessels at this point in time. We do have a contractor looking at that. As I said, we've produced a draft report. It was posted on the web yesterday. And then tomorrow we do have a wastewater treatment technology workshop here in Juneau. We're expecting national and international participants in that workshop. And then we will use the information gleaned at that workshop to further refine the draft report, and we hope to issue a final report by mid-April. Just had a copy of the workshop agenda here. Our contractor will present the results of the draft report as we know it today, and then we do have vendors and academia providing presentations at the workshop as well tomorrow. The other thing DEC did was to look at our existing regulations in light of HB 134. So we have regulations right now that allow other non-cruise ship permittees to apply for a mixing zone with their permit. The regulations include a 19-part test that must be met before DEC can authorize a mixing zone, including a requirement that the effluent is first treated to remove, reduce, and disperse the pollutants using the most effective technologically and economically feasible methods. We also have an anti-degradation policy in our regulations that requires the use of methods of pollution prevention, control, and treatment found by the department to be the most effective and reasonable, and that wastes and other substances to be discharged be treated and controlled to achieve the highest statutory and regulatory requirements. So those are regulations that apply to all wastewater dischargers. If mixing zones were allowed, DEC would modify the cruise ship wastewater discharge general permit to include mixing zones where it's appropriate. Any proposed permit modifications would, of course, require a public notice and public review. Mixing zones very likely may be prohibited in some areas and would only be allowed in other areas under conditions that would fully protect aquatic life and other uses of Alaska waters. A modified permit would still require the use of best available treatment technologies, and existing water quality standards, water quality regulations prohibit backsliding in treatment technology or decreases in effluent quality. So a change in the rule that would allow mixing zones would not allow a cruise ship to remove the very high level of treatment technology they have already have on board, nor could they somehow reduce the quality of the effluent that they produce. We already have regulations that prohibit that. Every 5 years, when the general permit is renewed, DEC must reevaluate what comprises best available treatment technologies, and then renewed permits are modified as appropriate to reflect any new commercially available treatment technologies. Mr. Chairman, HB 134 has no fiscal impact on the department. I think we have a zero fiscal note for it.
Is there available questions? Thank you. Is there questions from committee members? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. So if this bill passed exactly as it's written right now, and then tomorrow you find out at this conference that there's some new piece of technology that's cost-effective and would absolutely meet the needs of the requirements of the initiative, could you require it?
Yes, Representative Gardner, through the chair, yes, we do have the authority to require that.
Thank you.
Other questions? Is there anyone else from the department that wishes to testify today?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, it's the intent of the co-chairs is we have approximately 15 people that have signed up to testify, where it's our intent to hear everyone. So at this time, I would ask that John Binkley, if you could come to this to the microphone. John, you've done, like a lot of people in the room, you've done a lot of public service. Is it okay if we refer back to 30 years ago when you got elected to the Bethel City Council? So can I refer to you as Council Member Binkley?
Okay. That was many years ago. You can refer to me any way you'd like, Mr. Chairman. My preference, of course, being a lifelong riverboat captain is captain, but anything is fine.
Go ahead, sir. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, certainly over teleconference. I do reside in Fairbanks. My name is John Binkley, and I'm here this morning representing the Alaska Cruise Association, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 134. Two areas, and I understand there's a three-minute limit, so I'm going to keep my comments short so that everybody has an opportunity to be heard. Really, two points I'd like to focus on: why we need this legislation and the effect of the legislation. The purpose of the legislation, as I see it, really is to resolve or to correct an error that was made in the ballot initiative, and really should be viewed more as a technical amendment that actually carries out the will of the people. It was very clear through the public record and through statements by the initiative sponsors that the intent of this permitting provision of the initiative was to level the playing field. And to quote one of the initiative sponsors, Mr. Joe Geldof, I quote, "This would make the cruise industry adhere to the same pollution standards as fisheries, municipalities, and gas and oil companies." And a further quote by Gershon Cohen, who with the Earth Island Institute, that was one of the primary writers of this provision, as I understand it. This is his quote: "If passed, the new initiative will level the economic and environmental playing fields between the cruise ship industry and other major dischargers of polluted wastes into Alaska waters." And that really is what Representative Harris and the co-sponsors would accomplish with this legislation, is to do exactly what the people of Alaska were told that the intent of this legislation was. The second area, really, to talk about the effect of this, as the Department of DEC, Lynn Kent, just very thoughtfully articulated, this really gives the authority to DEC to make these decisions. The people of Alaska aren't scientists. The legislators aren't scientists. It's very difficult to go in and to legislate complicated permitting issues, and that's why the public, the legislature, has a Department of Environmental Conservation that we entrust to make these decisions. And that would be the effect of this legislation. It puts the authority to make these decisions with DEC. They are capable. We in the cruise industry have complete confidence, not only in DEC, but in the process that the permitting actually goes through. It's a very open and public process that people can participate in, the public can participate in, and not something that is really written in secret as the ballot initiative language is. So we applaud the sponsor for your stepping forward and submitting this legislation, for the co-sponsors, and we would urge its swift passage so that DEC can really do its job just as it is currently with the technology conference. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony and be available throughout if there are any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Captain Binkley. With the concurrence of the committee, I'd like to hold all questions because we have so many of the people that want to testify. And so, and we'll have questions at the end. The next person I'd like to go to is here in the room, and could Chip Toma please come to the microphone?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for holding the hearing today. And I do have some handouts for the committee, if you like. Last evening, the DEC issued a preliminary draft report, a feasibility study, on reducing the concentrations of dissolved metals and ammonia in large passenger ships. And this is the executive summary, the two-page. And on the back of that two-page summary is attached the testimony of Mr. Gershon Cohen. Dr. Cohen was not able to be here. He's on a ferry coming down from Haines. So if I may, and then also before I begin, Mr. Harris made a couple of comments about the amendments to the initiative that have been done so far. We had a third amendment, I believe it was last year, on Ocean Rangers, and that failed in the House to remove the Ocean Rangers from the ships. The 2001 HB 260, I believe, was a special session. I think Governor Knowles called that special session because the legislature was not able to pass legislation that year. And the Anchorage Daily News has always supported the initiative, and they are trying as best they can to figure out a compromise. And we agree also with the editorial that was published yesterday. We think it's very thoughtful, and it did hit all the right points. So if I may, first, what I'd like to do is very briefly go through some of the testimony by Dr. Cohen and refer to you to this executive summary, because the highlights in that executive summary, for instance, say that more information is needed, which is what this conference is going to accomplish tomorrow, and this is down the fourth paragraph down. However, the draft study finds that technologies exist in land-based applications that appear able to treat the pollutants, ammonia, nickel, copper, and zinc. And that's all we're talking about. I am only interested in ammonia and copper. Those are the things that affect marine life, and they affect anadromous salmon. I am very satisfied that the sewage and the air and the other things that we're regulating are being done well, but that ammonia and copper is a real problem, and that's what we have to look at as a state, as a legislature, and as individuals. So the two systems that look most promising on the second page of the executive study is reverse osmosis and anaerobic biological oxidation nitrification, MBR. They would most likely provide the adaptable systems to achieve the limits. So those are the two systems we're going to concentrate on. I'm hopeful that there'll be a big discussion of that tomorrow. Dr. Cohen's testimony on paragraph 3, he says, by definition, the state's water quality standards represent the best scientific information regarding the protection of aquatic life. In paragraph 4, mixing zones are not based on biological science or toxicology. They are engineering-based risk analyses. Paragraph 5, poor performance by other dischargers does not justify allowing the cruise lines to seek the lowest common denominator of waste treatment. It is important to note that many of their so-called peers, the municipalities, are using equipment designed in the 1950s and built in the 1970s. And on page 2, on paragraph 4, We've all heard the same cry from industry about removing fecal bacteria. They said it was impossible. Today, two-thirds of the fleet that comes to Alaska has these improved technologies on board. And also on page 2 and paragraph 3, the authorization of mixing zones is fundamentally illogical. Our oceans are finite, and putting more pollutants in our waters must at some point result in deleterious impacts on our fisheries. And again, this conference at Centennial Hall will address the available technologies and the costs to cure cruise ship discharges. And Mr. Chairman, I can go very quickly through my testimony. As I said, my name is Chip Toma. I am with the Responsible Cruising in Alaska. It's an advocacy group that helped pass the 2006 initiative, and that is a measure on fare taxes and ship pollution and consumer protection. This initiative passed 52% to 48%. 82,000 Alaskans voted yes. The cruise law has been a great success for state taxes, revenue sharing, capital projects in cruise ports, pollution controls, monitoring by the ocean rangers, and passenger consumer protection. To address HB 134, my helpful comment is that the legislation is premature and likely unnecessary. Many ships in the Alaska cruise fleet are already meeting our water quality standards on both copper and ammonia, those discharge substances that most harm anadromous salmon and marine life. I recently reviewed the notices of violations issued by DEC for the 2008 cruise ship discharges and was amazed to find that three-quarters of the fleet were not cited for any metals violations, but that 5 of the 7 metals violations are Princess ships. I believe the copper problem has now been identified. Those high discharges are centered in the older ships, like the Princess fleet, whose copper plumbing is leaching into treated discharge water. Dissolved copper is a big problem. It never goes away, it builds up in the water, and it disorients returning salmon. But most other ships have solved the onboard copper problem by using flex hose plastic plumbing, a 21st century fix for a 20th century problem. Rather than get into the details of ship plumbing and their huge onboard water-making machinery, I understand most of these ships make 50 to 60% of their water on board, and that's all copper plumbing. Suffice it to say that copper pipes leach, and miles and tons of copper pipe leach a lot. Copper leaching from cruise ship plumbing will be discussed thoroughly tomorrow at DEC's 2009 conference. I hope you can attend. Also in your packet, there is a list of all the technologies that are going to be discussed tomorrow, the different copper and ammonia removing processes that will be discussed, both for their effectiveness and cost. This removal technology is improving at a very rapid pace, pioneered by the need for absolutely clean water in U.S. computer manufacture. I am confident that copper will soon be removed from all cruise ship discharges. That's why HB 134 is premature, because solutions are very close at hand. DEC and the cruise industry will start solving them tomorrow here in Juneau. Regarding ammonia on board ships, the sole source is urine. Ammonia removal has been achieved, and this technology is readily available. Ironically, the relatively high ammonia counts are likely due to low-flow toilet systems on some ships where little water is used to flush. Since water dissolves urine and ammonia to manageable levels, I'm also confident that all ammonia problems will be solved on board, as most ships in the Alaska fleet are doing right now. In conclusion, HB 134 is premature because copper and ammonia discharge problems will be solved soon with science, funding, and plastic plumbing. The cruise passengers want clean ships. Alaska's subsistence, commercial, and sport users want clean ships that take no chances to harm Alaska fish and marine resources. We should all agree to fully protect clean marine waters by statute. The cruise laws passed in 2006 accomplished that. However, HB 134, also known as the Princess Pollution Bill or the Princess Exemption Bill, rolls back those protections.
Chairman,
yes, sir.
I tell you, who told you that?
That's my term. That's the one I'm using.
I hope you state that, because what you just said on the record,
yes, sir,
is for everybody to understand. That is your personal opinion, And if you're going to make that kind of statement,
yes, sir,
you better make darn sure that people know it's your opinion and nobody else's.
This is all based on the notices of violation, which were issued by the DEC. I have the entire packet here, and I'll pass that out for the committee. It lists all the Prince's ships
that are in
violation.
For the record, you state that that was your personal opinion.
That is my personal opinion. This is known as the Prince's Exemption or Pollution Bill.
By you.
By me.
Thank you.
And it rolls back those protections and allows potentially harmful discharges. Also, importantly, 134 would primarily exempt one cruise line, Princess, from the water quality standards being met by most of the 28 ships in the Alaska fleet. HB 134 thus financially penalizes those who make discharge improvements and now comply with Alaska cruise law. Finally, Alaskans want these discharge problems solved onboard the cruise ships and not mixing in our pristine waters. Thank you very much. Also in your packet is a thing called key disciplines. This is a list of devices that are manufactured by a firm in England. These are sensor devices that go on to both medical and marine applications. That's the type of equipment that we need for many of our cruise ships. That concludes my testimony today, Mr. Chairman. I sure appreciate your time.
Okay, Representative Millett.
Chip, I just have one question. You say you have some land-based technologies that exist. Are those being used in Alaska right now, these land-based technologies?
I'm going to find that out tomorrow.
In the report. So you don't know if these are being
used? The report I handed you where it mentions that was handed out yesterday at 5 p.m. I'm not familiar with it. I will find that out tomorrow. Oasis Consultants with DEC is very familiar with all that.
So you don't know if any of these are being used right now?
No, but DEC does and Oasis does.
Thanks.
Okay, we have many, many people. We've actually added people. So Representative Gardner, I'll ask the department to come up after all the testimony is concluded to answer, add to that question that Representative Millett had. Okay, let's go down the coast to Ketchikan. Is Bob Weinstein available, please, this morning?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Bob Weinstein. For the record, I am mayor of the city of Ketchikan, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important bill. The city of Ketchikan supports HB 134. In October, the city council unanimously passed Resolution 08-2246, which requested legislation to modify, based upon science, the standards governing the discharge of cruise ship wastewater. My understanding is that members of the committee have been given copies of the resolution. If that's not the case, we will get you a copy. I will want to say, like the two gentlemen who have testified before me, I'm not a scientist with a particular expertise in wastewater technology. But it's my understanding that the bill is designed to remove an arbitrary standard established by the initiative process and allow it to be replaced by a scientific standard. As an aside, it's important to remember that the principal public focus on the initiative when it was debated was on a $50 head tax, not on somewhat arcane environmental-related provisions. In my opinion, and that of the city of Ketchikan, water quality standards should be established by the application of principles of sound science, not by the application of politics. While I respect the initiative process, there is a good reason the founding fathers and mothers of our state provided for an amendment or repeal after 2 years in Article 11 of the Constitution. If environmental standards were set in a similarly punitive manner by initiative for the oil, fishing, mining, and other industries, Alaska would hardly have any industry at all. The application of the standard imposed by initiative in the absence of practical and readily available technology will result in cruise vessels traveling outside state waters for discharge in federal waters. This will result in either less visits or shorter visits to port communities like Ketchikan, with adverse economic impacts upon us. And I can assure you that Ketchikan, as well as other port communities, do not need any more adverse economic impacts. We've had enough of those. It has been my personal observation over the years that, like other industries, the cruise industry has made great improvements and has made significant investments in technology to improve water and air quality standards without the initiative. In other words, those improvements were made prior to any initiative. No one opposes high standards to protect our water and aquatic life. No one opposes adopting new technology as it becomes available and readily available. This bill, by removing an arbitrary standard, will simply allow DEC to do its job, protect water quality and state waters throughout coastal Alaska. Please support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Now we will go return to Juneau and inside the committee room here. Wayne Stevens, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Wayne Stevens. I'm President and CEO of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. The Alaska State Chamber of Commerce supports and endorses efforts to have the Alaska State Legislature amend the point of discharge standard governing the cruise ship wastewater permits. State Chamber membership has adopted as one of our top five legislative priorities support for changes to the point of discharge standard governing cruise ship wastewater permitting. The State Chamber urges adoption of HB 134, which deletes the point of discharge standard governing the cruise ship wastewater permits. State Chamber asks the state to apply the best available data and technology when setting standards for cruise ship wastewater discharge permits. State Department of Environmental Conservation holds not only cruise ships, but also ships such as our ferries to a different standard than it holds every other discharger in Alaska. This new permit measures effluent at the point of discharge instead of allowing a dilution zone, which every state in the United States allows and state of Alaska statutes contemplate. This is a different standard from what is required for coastal communities, the fishing industry, or oil platforms in the Cook Inlet. We strongly urge the legislature to give due consideration to modifying the standards governing the discharge of our cruise ship wastewater for low level based on science that will continue to protect aquatic life and the environment, but will not be technologically and financially unreasonable or impractical. Should the cruise ship industry need to comply with statutes of this permit, ships will have to hold their wastewater discharge until they are out of Alaska waters. Not only will this shorten time in port, it may result in fewer ports of call, but both results may negatively impact Alaska businesses and financially harm port communities. Small businesses that offer services to tour-related businesses may well go out of business without these suggested changes. The permit requirement is part of the cruise ship initiative that voters approved in 2006. That initiative imposed a number of environmental provisions, including one that requires ship to have a discharge permit and meet all Alaska water quality standards. Voters were told that ships would be held to the same standard that every other industrial and municipal discharger must meet, and that no new permitting program is necessary. However, the permit DEC issued holds the ships to a much different standard, one that may cost Alaska communities, Alaska ferries, and businesses unnecessarily. Alaska's water quality standards contemplate the use of dilution factors, such as mixing zones or short-term variances. According to DEC, mixing zones are provided for by the Clean Water Act and used by every state in the nation. Without mixing zones, wastewater would have to be treated to the point where it could serve as a source of drinking water before being discharged, and that is just not feasible here or anywhere else. Sewage treatment plants, seafood processors in Alaska could not operate without mixing zones. This is also true for cruise ships. Alaska should hold cruise ships to the same stringent standards as its coastal communities. It is not in the state's best interest to shorten the time cruise visitors have ashore or to force the elimination of some ports of call. Now, I'm not a scientist either, but it's my understanding a plastic pipe comes from oil and gas. And so if we eliminate copper and suggest that everybody goes to plastic pipe, would not one infer that that would be support for additional drilling? And with that, I conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens.
Value added.
Thank you. For courtesy, there's a lot of people. In fact, we're getting more and more people that want to testify. Out of courtesy for all those people, if you're listening in, please keep your comments to 3 minutes. Please keep them concise and to the point. So at this time, we're going to go back up the coast, and I'd like to go to Jennifer Gibbons in Cordova. Please come to the mic.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Gibbons, and I'm speaking to you today from Cordova, Alaska. I'd like to thank the chairman and the committee for the opportunity to speak on this issue. I'm the executive director of the Prince William Sound Keeper, and our mission is to protect water quality in Prince William Sound. And our board and our membership is comprised of residents from all five communities in Prince William Sound. I had all sorts of fancy things that I thought I would say to you today, but there are a lot more experts in the room, and I think that really the message here is quite simple. The voters were not confused when they passed this initiative. It was not arbitrary, and it was not an unscientific decision on their part. This is very, very simple. Their intent is to protect the water on which our environment, our culture, and our economy depend. And the most important message that I could share with you today is that this can be done. I'd also like to remind everyone that here in Prince William Sound, we're still recovering from the effects of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And here in Alaska, we've recently had our first warning on the consumption of fish. So the metals that are at issue here are serious, and they're not benign, and their accumulation in the environment should be taken very seriously. Dilution is, after all, pollution. This bill is not a small or insignificant change to the law, and at a minimum, it's premature. And I applaud your caution and your appropriate desire to be fully informed. And as we know, there's a lot of new information coming out, so this is a very timely conversation. But I also can sense a bit of a gut reaction on your part, and I would say trust your gut. These regulations, these standards can be met, and this can be done. And therefore, I would respectfully suggest to the committee that your deliberations would be better spent discussing how to help or motivate industry to comply. And perhaps you should start with the simple stuff. What have they done since the initiative to comply? I asked John Binkley and Bruce Bustamante this in person over lunch while we were on the Coral Princess, which is a very impressive ship, and it was an impressive tour. And they simply couldn't answer me. There wasn't an answer. In addition to being an environmentalist, I'm also an advocate for business. I serve on my local chamber of commerce. I have a background in destination marketing for the hospitality industry, so I support this type of business. But we shouldn't abandon the standards that set Alaska apart. We should make every effort to meet those standards. What can we do to help industry? That's my question. And I think there are some things that can be done. Perhaps the new technology would make it possible to comply by 2010. Maybe they need a little more time. Perhaps there's some other innovative ways to help industry to comply, and I would ask folks to maybe give some consideration of how we use the head tax. There might be something we could do there. So thank you very much for this opportunity to comment. I just, again, will reiterate, this is a very simple issue. It can be done. Let's not walk away from the great standard that Alaska has set.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'd like to also, at this time, please call Stan Stevens to the microphone.
Thank you. This is Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify. I'm Stan Stevens. From Valdez, cruising wildlife trips. I do support HB 134. HB 134 protects our water quality standards by allowing DEC to still monitor the cruise ships and maintain best available technology through sound science. The cruise ships have brought their air and water quality standards to a level better than all of our coastal communities, and that includes Cordova and other vessel users. We have many fishing boats, recreational boats, boats like mine and others that aren't meeting a lot of these standards or coming close to them. This bill allows us to be real in our regulation and still helps us to maintain a clean marine environment. I applaud Representative Harris for HB 134. It maintains our water quality standards and solves a very difficult problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Stan. I'd like to return to Juneau and ask Kurt Hardcastle for his testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, co-chair, and members. First and foremost, my name is Kirk Hardcastle. I'm a resident here in Juneau. I am a commercial fisherman. I have my own commercial fishing operation outside of Juneau here, and it's actually a corporation. I ship fish throughout the lower 48 as well as Europe. I'm a freelance captain. I have worked with marine sanitation systems from Mexico to Alaska and Hawaii. I have a bit of experience in the marine environment and discharges that are involved, and a lot of complications, and it's technical. They have their work cut out for them, without a doubt, from my own experience. I've been fishing here for almost 10 years. I just do want to let you know that I am a marine engineer. Of course, being a fisherman, I think everybody knows what you have to do to be able to take care of your own fishing boats. A few things is that I hear a lot of talk about the discharges, and the main thing that I want to emphasize is that for me, as a commercial fisherman, it's not the concentration, it's the volume. We're talking about a volume of discharge that's 1 million people, possibly twice a day discharge, in Southeast Alaskan waters. That's more than the whole state of Alaska discharging in Southeast Alaskan waters. And that brings me to my next point, is that I have been in, on, and around the cruise ship industry for many years. I've worked in the cruise ship industry for about 4 years. And I have been behind these cruise ships with my commercial fishing boat. I have seen the discharge, and some of them do discharge within reason, without a doubt, and others, I'm not a scientist, but I would question the 3 to 4 foot high bubble foam ball that comes behind those boats that does smell like sewage discharge. And it's the volume, once again. It's the volume, not the concentration, that's my concern. It's more people than in the entire state of Alaska discharging possibly twice a day in our fishing grounds. Once again, people have noted that this is a mobile unit, and that means that they are discharging in our fishing waters. Now, for those of you who have not read Alaska's Economic Trends of January, it is listed as commercial fishing is considered the stabilizing influence on Alaska's economy for this coming economic storm. These are quotes on page 7, as well as Palin has mentioned about her, has said that we must live within the means of our future. I'm not opposed to the bill. I just would like it to be taken into consideration of the volume versus the concentration, and that we wouldn't want to jeopardize anything as far as a food source for people being shipped to the lower 48 as well as Europe. I ship to 10 states and Europe. And all it takes is one, possibly two, problems in the fishing industry to hit the lower 48. And I would hate to see complications in one of our most stabilizing economic influences for the state of Alaska. So please just take that into consideration. That volume is also an issue. And I think we can take a look at that as well. Thank you very much. I appreciate
you. Can I just ask one question?
Yes.
Just briefly, I hear your numbers. I'm a little confused. Did you say 1 million people per day?
No. No, 1 million. I'm sorry. You are correct. It's 1 million per the season.
Per season?
Per season, correct.
And all in Southeast?
That's what this list says.
Okay.
And this is Alaska Economic Trends, January 2009. And it's a state review of our economics, as well as Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Southeast Alaska. Southeast Alaska as a region.
Okay, I thought you said 1 million a day, and I was going to try to.
I may have. I apologize.
Say 5,000 on one.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out. That's a lot of them.
And there is science available to mitigate these, and we can take care of it. Thank you very much.
Kirk, thank you very much, and I appreciate your being concise with your testimony. And I'd ask others to follow Kurt's example. 3 minutes, please, because we have so many people to testify. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time.
At this time, I'd like to move to Karen Hess. And Karen, could you state your name, affiliation, and your location for the record, please?
Yes, Karen Hess, Haines, Alaska. And my husband and I own a tour company, River Adventures. And I want to thank the chair and the committee today for allowing me to testify. I'll keep it brief, as you have asked for us to do. There's been a lot of scientific data, and I appreciate DEC's testimony today. 2 years ago, I was very much involved with the initiative, as I was with the help of Representative Holmes. I was involved with the disclosure statement, so I support House Bill 134. I've written a letter. I believe you all have a copy of that. I sent it to all the representatives, and I know most of you have received it. But I just want to say that when the initiative was first gathering its signatures, it started here in Haines, of course, as most of you know, since Gershon Cohen is a member of our community. But I had a conversation with someone who was actually gathering signatures on that initiative, and I approached that person, and I said, are you aware that at that time I was concerned about the disclosure statement, and I said, are you aware of the disclosure statement in the initiative? And she said, well, yeah, she said, it may not be right, but she said, let's get this thing going and get it on the ballot so the people can vote on it. And if it passes, then the legislature can fix the problems that are in it. And I said, okay. That was pretty much the end of our conversation. The other thing I'd like to say is that itineraries, I'm not sure if the committee is aware, itineraries are being finalized now for 2010 for these ships. They are planning far in advance for their itineraries. 2011 will begin their planning, or if they haven't already. And I believe that now, for with House Bill 134, allows DEC to be able to implement whatever new programs or technology is out there, mandate for these ships. But at least the ships can plan their itineraries and continue to come here. Otherwise, they're going to have to plan elsewhere. The East Coast is definitely vying for our business. And the last thing I'd like to say is small little quote that came from a recent movie that I saw, Australia. Just because it is doesn't mean it should be. I thank you very much for my testimony today, allowing me to testify, and I urge you to pass 134, House Bill 134.
Thank you, Karen. At this time, I'd like to return to Juneau and ask Kathy Wasserman to join us, please.
I think she's here, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. She's not. All right. All right. Thank you. The next one that we have, Chris Anderson, please state your name, affiliation, and your location, please.
Hello, this is Chris Anderson. I am one of the owners of the Glacier Brew House and Orso in Anchorage. And I do support the passage of House Bill 134. As all Alaskans, I definitely work and know the need for a clean, safe marine environment. I'm one of the largest sellers of seafood in a restaurant environment in Anchorage. But my concern is that we are losing an industry in the cruise industry. And without help to this industry, that my 250 crew members could be adversely affected. So my request is that we support this bill, and that we all work together to continue to have a clean, safe, and growing visitor industry, and use the technologies that we all can agree on and move this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. At this time, I'd like to let's go to Ketchikan, and we'll do all three people that wish to testify back to back. And I'd ask that you please keep your comments to the point. First of all, is Robert Shear online?
Yes, I am.
Please state.
My name is Robert Shear. I'm the owner of the Great Alaskan Lumberjack Show. I'd like to thank the chair, the co-chair, and the committee for the opportunity to testify. In Ketchikan, being very close to the marine environment and being in the tourism industry for the last 10 years, I've had the opportunity to not only participate but assess certain governing rules and regulations affecting our industry. The head techs presented to us a unique opportunity not only to the state of Alaska, but one that influenced our industry, the tourism industry, in ways that we, in the beginning, did not understand, but came to understand more as we analyzed what the head tax was about. We believe, or I believe, that there was great prejudice in crafting this bill, or in this head tax, by its proponents, that had unintended results for the tourism industry and the way it affects the state of Alaska and monitoring its relationship with this very primary industry. The crafting of this head tax enabled the prejudice to take place that specifically called out for rules and regulations that overstepped what was then areas that were governed by the DEC. The effects that it can have within our industry could result in the loss of thousands of jobs and tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars over time. I don't want to get into the specifics of how those losses can be quantified. But in our industry alone, in our business, we pay in excess of over $120,000 in state and local, or in local real estate and sales tax. We employ up to 35 individuals with a payroll of over $700,000. Our one business could be in jeopardy if ships were deferred from Alaska waters based on not only this part of the head tax that affects the wastewater, but many of the other portions of the head tax that are not on the table. So I, as an owner of an Alaskan tourism business, support HB 134 and ask for your support in allowing the DEC to work within its governance with the cruise industry that I have seen in the last 10 years have worked very well together. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Robert. Same community, if we could go to Shauna Lee, please.
Good morning. My name is Shauna Lee. I am a manager with the Great Alaskan Lumberjack Show, and I did send a formal letter yesterday to all the members of the House and the Senate, so I won't repeat what you've already heard from me. I just wanted to make a brief statement that I would also like to lend my support for House Bill 134, which would enable the cruise industry to conduct business in a scientifically reasonable way. The cruise industry has made great strides in bringing their emission standards up to some of the highest in the world. I believe that whatever we can do to make this industry feel welcome is of the utmost importance to our economy, especially the economy of Southeast Alaska. By requiring them to meet standards that are impossible to meet at this time, which the previous version of this bill does, we are once again putting a barrier up before an industry that is, for all intents and purposes, supporting many Southeast Alaska towns, and plain and simple, is supporting my family. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Shauna. We'll stay in Ketchikan for the third person, Lynn Lawrence.
Good morning. My name is Lynn Lawrence. I reside in Ketchikan, and I'm a marketing consultant, and I represent companies that provide shore excursions to cruise ship passengers. And they include Takwan Air, Alaska Rainforest Sanctuary, Alaska Canopy Adventures, Seahorse Ventures, and Experience Alaska Tours. These companies collectively employ 225 persons. We urge you to pass House Bill 134. because we are very sensitive to the environment. We are we put the environment environment concerns before anything else as far as when it comes to the cruise industry. The cruise industry have made great strides in their handling of wastewater in the last 10 years. And at the present time, they're trying to reach standards that are mandated by legislation rather than on a scientific basis. House Bill 134 would allow the Department of Environmental Conservation to enforce wastewater discharge on a scientific basis, which we believe is the way it should be. And so we urge you to pass House Bill 134. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to return to Juneau and Kathy Wasserman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Co-Chair. I'm in Anchorage via teleconference. My name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. The Alaska Municipal League is in favor of House Bill 134. During our annual conference in November in Ketchikan this year, our entire membership voted on a resolution 2009-08, which I hope you have in your office, maybe not in front of you, which asked to modify the standards governing the discharge of cruise ship wastewater. The discussion that took part during the debate of that resolution basically centered on the fact that though the room was full of local mayors, councilmen, and assembly persons, and probably very few scientists, the fact that they stressed was that they believed that this process should go through DEC and allow DEC to make these calls on the permitting process. And they felt that in such hard economic times, and as we, as you know, have made promises to the legislature that municipalities would do all they could to support themselves, we certainly need to take looks at all the things we do that might inhibit municipalities from having business, industry, so forth, that helps those communities survive. So we would certainly, while there were some good points about some of the technology that is available now, we didn't feel that the cart should come before the horse, that technology should be investigated by DEC, looked at, and DEC can certainly hold those industries to the standards. So with that, we are in favor of House Bill 134. Thank you for the chance to testify.
Thank you, Kathy. The next one, we're on the home stretch here. We have a few more to go. If you could keep your comments to 3 minutes. Jeremy Geezer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, co-chair, and the committee. My name is Jeremy Geezer. I reside at 1122 Timberline Court here in Juneau, Alaska, and I am a member of the board for the local Alaska Travel Industry Association that represents nearly 70 local tourism and tourism-related businesses here in the Juneau community, and we are in support of House Bill 134. Also, I haven't heard anybody yet from the statewide chapter, but I just want to let you know that they have also moved a letter of support for this bill as well, statewide as well as our local chapter. Pretty much, we just believe that the experts should be able to do their job, and it really just comes down to giving the control to DEC to be able to regulate the discharge issue with the cruise ships. They have the expertise to do that. They're going to be able to look at the technologies available, and they're going to be able to make those best decisions. You know, I think we're concerned mostly because of the way that if this law stands the way it is written today, it is going to negatively affect our business and the amount of business we can do. You know, just because the technology is available, I don't think that that really means that the cruise lines will necessarily implement that technology in Alaska waters all the time. It's going to be a process to get there, and they will opt some of those ships just to move outside of Alaska waters. And when they do that, it pulls hours away from the time that they can spend in port, and it will take out some possible port calls. And just during the economic times that we're in now, I just ask you to consider that and weigh that cost benefit, you know, this any technology that may or may not exist. You know, of course, if it doesn't exist, you can't weigh that, but if it does, look at the cost for that and what kind of impact that's going to have over time. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify to you today.
Thank you, Jeremy. Okay, the next person on the list, Jason Brun, please state your name, affiliation, and your location.
Hello, for the record, my name is Jason Bruni. I am in Anchorage, and I am the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. On behalf of RDC, I'm testifying today in support of HB 134. RDC is a statewide, nonprofit, membership-funded organization founded in 1975. The RDC membership is comprised of individuals and companies from Alaska's oil and gas, mining, timber, tourism, and fisheries industries, as well as Alaska Native corporations, local communities, organized labor, and industry support firms. RDC's purpose is to link these diverse interests together to encourage a strong, diversified private sector in Alaska and expand the state's economic base through the responsible development of our natural resources, including our tourism resources. Setting standards for discharges through the initiative process, regardless of the industry, in my opinion, is not appropriate. Indeed, what was put into place by this initiative would not allow cruise ships to discharge tap water from Anchorage, Fairbanks, or any other port community for that matter. As legislators, and indeed as Alaskans, we must do our best to encourage new investment in the state, including the tourism industry, by allowing reasonable and attainable standards for all industries. By correcting this error, DEC will have the tools to use the best available science, as they do with all industries in Alaska, to establish safe discharge limits that will protect Alaska's clean water. We encourage the committee to vote in favor of this bill, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Jason. Good morning. Okay, before I close public testimony, I would like to ask Captain Binkley to come on for some closing remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The testimony has been very interesting this morning, and I think it really goes back to the point that I stressed earlier, is that all this really simply does, the effect of this, is allow DEC to make these determinations based on what the best science is, based on what the technology is. The industry embraces new technology. It embraces decisions being based on science. We work closely with the scientific panel that Lynn Kent mentioned in the late 90s and in the early 2000s that really did studies that were based on science, not somebody's personal agenda, but what was true science. And we invested the money based on what the scientific panel came up with and the legislature determined was appropriate. The industry's invested over $200 million to put the best available technology on board the ships. And we worked closely with DEC and the EPA this summer to do further testing and science in Skagway Harbor. We're working with DEC on this technology conference. Virtually all of the lines will be represented, all of their environmental departments and engineering departments, at the conference that's taking place tomorrow to work with DEC to find out what the new technologies are. We're not afraid of technology. We're not afraid of science. But when it's simply junk science that some of these standards are based on, it's really inappropriate for the state to be basing those standards on that. So I would encourage you to move the bill forward. It simply allows DEC to do their job. I think we all trust DEC to do that, and I have every confidence in their ability. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and we're always available to answer any questions.
Thank you, John. At this time, I'm going to close the public testimony, except for committee members who wish to may have specific questions to people that did testify. So the public testimony is closed at this time. I would first go to Representative Gartner. She is like to ask Lynn Kent to a specific question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the other testifiers said some interesting things. Actually, several of them did, and I guess I wanted to ask for you to respond to some of what we've heard and see who you where you would agree and where you would disagree. And I think that the person that was speaking when I wanted your response was Jennifer Givens from Cordova. And one of the things she said, which was new to me, and if you can respond to it, that'd be great. If not, maybe we can ask her later. One, she said, we've had our first warning on consumption of fish here, and I hadn't heard that. So that's one question. Also, she asked what has been done since the passage of the initiative to comply. She said nothing. I think the industry would dispute that, but maybe you can clear the air for us. Thank you.
For the record, please.
Gardner, through the chair, my name again is Lynn Kent, Director for Division of Water at DEC. Unfortunately, I'm not the director in charge of the fish advisories, although it is my understanding that there was one fish consumption alert that was issued, and it had to do with large, flat whitefish. And I don't remember what the contaminants were. I believe it was mercury. I'd be happy to get the committee specific information about that. In terms of what the industry has done, the permit that DEC issued required a couple things. Because we put a compliance schedule in that permit with a time frame for the cruise ships to come into compliance with the long-term effluent limits, again, the water quality standards at the end of the pipe, our regulations on compliance schedule say that they have to do some things along the way. And so what we did was ask them to submit to DEC a source reduction evaluation and plan, which required them to look at, again, those potential sources of the four contaminants that we're concerned about. So we asked them to look at the products that are used on board, the water that they bunker from the communities, and any other potential source, the piping on the vessels, anything that might be contributing to those contaminants in their effluent. So the companies that are covered under the permit have all submitted those plans to us. They're also required to provide us an annual report on their progress on the source reduction and also their progress in looking at new technologies should they find that source reduction isn't sufficient to meet the water quality standards at the end of the pipe. So they've done quite a bit of work.
Follow-up question, and are you comfortable in saying that they've made a good faith effort for compliance to date?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, I would say that the cruise ships' lines reactions have been mixed there. Some have done more than others. I think they've all made a credible effort, but some have gone further than others.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Harris, then Representative Millett.
Lynn, thank you for your testimony and for appearing here today. I talked to the commissioner a couple days ago, and I know he's busy, so he sent you instead. But is there anything in this piece of legislation which really does one thing? It eliminates five words from the initiative and what became law. Is there anything in there that decreases, minimizes, reduces at all the Department of Environmental Conservation's ability to monitor, assess, evaluate, whatever label you want to put on it, the quality of the water, the quality of the discharge coming out of the cruise ships that you have that authorization to monitor?
Representative Harris, through the chair, no, there's nothing in this legislation that prohibits our ability to establish protective permits, to monitor compliance with those permits, and there's nothing in the legislation that would change our approach really to the technology. Cruise ships would still be required to use the best available technology. We'd still have to look at that every 5 years when we look at the permit. And DEC would still have in place the tools we already use with other permittees to ensure protection of water quality, including protection for aquatic life.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, there's nothing in here that should scare the people of Alaska about the quality of the water or anything else?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harris, no, I don't believe so.
Thank you very much.
Representative Millett.
Thanks. I was curious about the land-based technologies. It says in your report that they exist. Are those in use in Alaska currently?
Representative Millett, through the chair, I'm not sure if they are in use on the shore-based facilities here in Alaska. I think there are a few small package plants that may use reverse osmosis technology, but not the larger community systems.
And follow up?
Yes.
And are those those land-based technologies, are they measured at point of discharge also?
Representative Millett, through the chair, the permits that DEC issues for wastewater discharges from the community systems in Alaska, almost all of them rely upon mixing zones in order to achieve water quality standards.
One more follow-up.
Yes.
And what's the mixing zone measurement for municipalities and other areas?
Representative Millett, it varies from community to community. We look at each one on a site-specific basis. We look at the volume. We look at the concentrations of contaminants in the discharge. We look at the flushing. It depends on whether it's discharging into a river or into the ocean. So it's always a very site-specific, detailed look at that particular facility.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Cisna?
Well, this is a question, I believe, to the chair. And that is, in the testimony we heard terms like junk science, but I don't remember any of the people who testified that are scientists, because I think if, in fact, we're going to look at something of this nature, I think what I want is to actually hear some real solid information on if there was junk science in the original initiative and we've been living with that. That's kind of horrifying. And if we're changing that, then I'd like to know how and what kind of proof there is. Because if, in fact, we're going to really rely on science as a way of measuring what we do, I want to know what it is.
Thank you, Representative Sisson. I think your comments are well taken. This has been an opportunity to hear a lot of opinions and hopefully we'll all learn more. Is there other questions? Yes, Representative Munoz.
Earlier in your testimony, you stated that the cruise lines employ advanced water discharge systems and produce a high-quality effluent, and that, in fact, there is not the technology today to achieve the standard that the initiative language proposed for on-site, on-board treatment of the discharge. Is that indeed true?
Representative Munoz, through the chair, the advanced wastewater treatment systems, and there are several different manufacturers of those, were designed primarily to treat fecal coliforms, so bacteria that comes from the vessels, because years ago when we first started looking at cruise ship discharges, that was the big concern, was fecal coliform, and they are very effective at treating for that. They are less effective at treating for some of the parameters that we're looking at today, the ammonia, the metals.
Mm-hmm. But that there is not technology that you're aware of now that they could immediately employ if this...
Representative Munoz, that's correct. There are technologies available that have been used in a laboratory and that have been used at shore-based facilities, but they haven't been sized, designed, constructed, and installed on a cruise ship within the confined space on a cruise ship and operated effectively at this point in time.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Keller, any comments or questions?
Well, I wasn't going to have one, but I'll follow up. As I understand it, this is it may work on land-based. I was just reviewing some of the testimony here from Oasis Environmental, and they use terms like they appear to be able to treat, and it's possible. And they also make the comment later on that the using reverse osmosis may be the solution that works. You know, so in general, it's more of a statement than a comment, but I'd like her follow-up. It seems to me like it's been implied in some of the testimony that the science is available, technology is available to get this done, and that's iffy. And like one of the testifiers pointed out, the schedules are being made for 2010, and where this does not reduce your ability, I just don't see the problems.
That's all right, take care.
It wasn't much of a question. It was Kathy, or Representative Munoz, jolted me there. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cisna?
Just on that subject, I guess the thing that has come into my mind several times here with that comment that the technology is maybe there, but we haven't had any one try it yet. And I'm thinking of some of the regulations that we now have to clean up air, that kind of thing, that technology existed, but it never got tried. What kind of incentives are there? And is it a matter of if the technology exists, if there was some kind of incentive, would it? Or what are the costs? I mean, I'd like to know why it hasn't been put in place if, in fact, it exists. And sometimes it's a very solid, good reason. And sometimes it's merely that the incentives don't exist to actually have it happen. Do you have any idea?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, the development of wastewater technology, like the development of any technology, takes some time. And it also takes some time once it's developed and works in one application to adapt it for another application. Mm-hmm. So while we have technologies now that can treat water, I'll give you an example. In the laboratory, you can produce clean water from almost any kind of contaminated water with enough money and enough treatment. But making that work in a cruise ship, for instance, in very confined space, with the expertise of the operators on board, those kinds of things take time to develop. And I think there are incentives for cruise ship companies as well as others to continue to improve wastewater treatment technology.
Thank you very much.
Our regulations are pushing for that.
Appreciate the comments and the questions. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. I'd like to move HB 121 from committee with individual recommendations.
34.
I'm sorry, 134. Excuse me. I'd like to move HB 134.
Object.
Individual.
Yes.
CS for HB 134 with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note. Thank you.
You heard my objection.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am, I did. There is an objection. At this time, we'll have a vote.
Maybe speak to the objection.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I may. I think personally that we aren't in a great hurry. I understand the industry is under some pressure themselves because of the season. But when I personally weigh that with the importance of the oceans and the waters of Alaska to every single person in the state, what I know is that it took a long time to put the bill through to begin with, and that each time we do something that can have impacts, I think it's very important, and that's why the legislature was set up the way it was, for us to actually take time making sure that we get all the information together to make sure that we are truly responsible. And I not very long ago took another oath to the Constitution to make sure that we use the resources in a way that's really good for our people. And so I really want to urge people to hold this bill until we have at least another day to get some more information. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And my concerns are very similar. I may very well vote yes on this when it comes to the House floor. And I think it's clearly legal for us to change initiative language, particularly when it's affixed to a problem or an unintended consequence. We have precedents, and I think it's not only the right thing to do, but our responsibility to do it. But at the same time, I think we need to make sure that we do it in a very thoughtful and thorough way. And I, for one, I'm interested in hearing what comes out of this conference tomorrow. I think it's absolutely appropriate for us to wait a day or two and bring this up again on Thursday and see if there's some information that completely changes the way things look right now.
Mr. Chairman, to that point?
Yes. Representative Harris.
There will be nothing. I can guarantee you there will be nothing that comes out of that conference tomorrow that will change the intent of this legislation, because anything that comes out of that conference can be implemented, should be implemented if it's beneficial to the environment and beneficial to the overall operations of the cruise ships in the state by the DEC. Nothing changes that. Passage of this legislation out of this committee on the floor through the other body and becomes law changes nothing. It does give the DEC which it should have done, which the initiative should have done in the very beginning. It gives the DEC the ability to do their job. And the DEC was created under the Constitution of the United of the State of Alaska as well. They're a department that's created through there to protect our environment. Not the people of Alaska by initiative, the DEC by science. Period. And that's what we're trying to do here. Mr. Chairman, I urge the passage of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Harris. Any other comments? Motion's in order. Recording Secretary, we have a roll call vote, please.
Representative Keller.
Pass. Yes.
Representative Millett.
Yes. Pass. I'm sorry, yes.
Representative Keller was a yes. Representative Millett.
Yes.
Representative Sisna.
No.
Representative Gardner.
No.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Herron.
Yes.
Representative Munoz.
Yes.
Okay.
5 yes, 2 no.
The bill is on to the next committee. This meeting is 9:45. We're adjourned.